Have you ever had a moment where you felt like things were out of your control? I mean, truly, something going on that you wish were different and you have no choice, you have no say in the matter. Maybe the government made a decision that robbed you of some benefits or did something, prevented you, made a law that keeps you from doing what you want to do. Maybe the calendar just shifted. Maybe you had a great plan, you had your week planned out, and the school didn't care, the coaches didn't care. Life just gets in the way, doesn't it? And that can feel chaotic. It can feel really scary when life's just coming at you and you don't have a sense of control, but you're just getting pushed around. I think it's exactly the kind of feeling that Mary and Joseph had when they were forced to go to Bethlehem to take the census of the government. The Roman emperor said, go. It says decree in the scriptures. It says that he decreed that a census should be taken. That's not a polite recommendation. There might have been a smile at some point, but the truth is, at the end of the day, if you don't do it, there will be blood by the sword. So you're going to go. So it says in verse 3 that everyone went to their hometown to register. This is Luke chapter 2. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth to Galilee in Judea to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house of David and the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. So it says, while they were there, in verse 6, while they were there, it does not say how long it was there. I find that interesting. Bethlehem's not a large town. Wouldn't think it takes a long time to get the thing done, but they're there. We don't know how long. But while they were there, she gives birth to the son, and they place him in a manger with no guest room available to them. The word I want to focus on this morning, in this part, the first part of our, there's two messages, and they'll be brief, but guest room. The NIV gets it really well on this, gets it right. Guest room is a good translation. Others say inn. And if you, anybody here speak two languages? Raise your hand if you speak. If you've really studied or do two languages, you know that sometimes there's not a word-for-word translation, and you have to do some explaining. So that's why there's so many Bible translations. And truth is, inn and guest room are both right in different contexts. So an inn is what you might think of. I think of an ancient version of a Motel 6, right? This is just a place you pop in if you don't have much, probably in their case, not a lot of money. Just a temporary place to stay. I think there were stations and places, public inns for travelers who don't have much to just get some shelter. This word, though, in Greek is also used in the upper room story where Jesus tells his disciples to go ahead of him and prepare a place for the what we think of as the Last Supper. That word there for upper room is kateluma, which is the word that was translated here as guest room. And it can be used for guest rooms in a house, just like if you are fortunate enough to live in an apartment or a condo or a house big enough that you have an extra bedroom, you might keep a bed in there for close friends or family if they're traveling, desperate situations. And most of the time, it just stays made, and nothing's happening in there, but you have that place prepared. As small as the houses were in the ancient Near East, they still had place for guests. In fact, it was a really important part of their culture. You know, we pride ourselves in Texas, and I come from Tennessee originally, Southern hospitality. I don't know that we hold a candle to ancient Near Eastern hospitality. I mean, especially keep in mind, as Luke pointed out, Joseph is from the line of David, the greatest king in Israel's history. And Bethlehem, the city of David, is his family's lineage, his home, and not being a big town, I'm sure if he showed up and knocked on a door, so to speak, and said, hi, I'm Joseph, son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so, son of David, they're going to go, oh, yeah, that's Uncle Johnny, right? Yeah, come on in, your family, your kin. It would have been incredibly hard to imagine people completely turning them away. So what does all this mean? Well, it might mess up some of what you think about the Christmas story, but not totally. Let me show you a picture. I have some pictures of the... This is a 2D layout of an ancient Near Eastern home, but let's get on to the 3D one. It's a lot better. So on the second floor is really the living quarters where they sleep. So they have, the family's home, and they may portion out a piece of it for guests and things like that. As you can tell, there's not a lot of room. On the first floor, they do different things, but it's not uncommon that in cold weather or certain situations, they would have some other animals come inside as shelter from predators and harsh weather, things like that. You know, it's we have domesticated animals in our house, so you know, I don't know about you, but when I think about that, it's very bizarre to me to think of a donkey or a chicken or something in the house, and that's weird. But you know, think of it like a detached garage. If you were going to have, you had a puppy, or if you had a dog or a cat that's giving birth, and they're going to have a litter of kittens or puppies, you might put them in the bathroom, in the pantry. I've heard of. There's a poem that mentions that. If you got a garage, that would be, you know, an ideal place for it. So that's kind of how they were thinking about it. So what all that means is it's very possible that, let me just kind of not totally erase, but throw this out there to you, that you know, when you think about Jesus being born in a manger, you think of it as this really destitute place where nobody is. It's just sort of a barn dominium in the middle of nowhere. It's them and the animals. It might well be the case that they did find relatives. The guest room was full. Knowing their culture, they very probably took them in, and they did give birth there, but being as crowded as it would be around the holidays for us, if you have family coming in, you know how busy a house can get. There's not room for you here. We take you in, you give birth, and they lay Jesus in this manger, which is an animal trough that are sometimes in that culture built into the walls on the first floor, which would have elevated the baby off the floor. You're not going to lay the baby on the floor on which animals are walking. That's dangerous. But that's where they laid Jesus. So, if you walked in here this morning feeling like your life's out of control, and that's not an ideal situation, right? And that may be better than some of the versions we've heard. Still not ideal. Think of Mary. Goodness gracious, she's pregnant. She's at her future in-laws, not the parents-in-law, but probably some. This is the town of David. This is her husband's or fiance's side of the family giving birth in some stranger's house, maybe laying the baby in a manger in the animal shelter on the first floor. Not ideal. Not ideal. It's chaotic. And if you walked in here this morning, this is what I want you to hear from this first portion. If you walked in here feeling like your life is out of control, if you've walked in here feeling like there's too much chaos prevailing over you, I have some really good news. That's the exact kind of place Jesus is known to show up. In a way, that's exactly what's about to happen as the next characters in Luke 2 reveal themselves in the story.